Hey, the tape is rolling. I want to talk about mostly. I don't know if Mike Knuth told you what we're talking about with this interview, but we'd like to talk about Last Exit a little bit, because me and a friend of mine named Scott Davis is helping me do this interview, and we've got the Last Exit albums, and we find them very interesting. You know, they're a lot different than any of the other music I've heard you do outside of some of the stuff with James Blood. And here's some of the questions I'd like to start asking. Do you, according to Wayne Shorter, there's a new avant-garde. It's not necessary every decade, but only when needed, when the culture's ready for it. Do you feel like a new avant-garde is coming on, something like a controlled version of the 60s in the 80s and 90s? Because this seems to be evident on Power Tools and Last Exit.
Well, I know, and I very highly respect Wayne Shorter. I think he's one of those, he is the premier in his genre of playing saxophone player that is playing. As far as knowing if it's the time for the avant-garde, I'm just playing. I'm not playing from a viewpoint of if it's the time for the avant-garde. He's probably right. It probably does go in a cycle. Seems to be some kind of cycle appearing at this particular point. There's certainly a ripple in the environment that's motivating people in the arts to go to the core of their own lives, to search deeper and to bring forth something more profound that has been going on. Myself, I think it's part of all of one mass movement where a lot of things have been suppressed, overlooked, or denied. You know, and maybe that's what's surfacing at this time. So probably Mr. Shorter is probably very correct. It is a trend, not so much a trend, but a cycle that is reappearing. It probably will continually reappear throughout human history.
How do you feel like Last Exit and maybe your own band, the Decoding Society, fit into this new avant-garde movement?
I have always known that I have something to do with the course of the movement of music. It's just, I guess I'd have to say it's intuition. Basically, but it's always been a very strong intuitive feeling that my life is some way connected and tied in with the movement of the change of music. So I guess I was born into the right time and the right place and the right situation, and I'm here at this particular time affecting or doing whatever that is that has to be changed to bring more people to a realization of what music really is to our lives at this particular time and point.
Okay, thank you. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about the Last Exit band. Prior to the recording of Song X by Ornette Coleman and Pat Metheny, it's documented that extensive rehearsals took place to develop a new musical vocabulary between them. Are similar ideas taking place in Last Exit as well as Power Tools as far as the development of a new musical vocabulary is concerned?
Song X might have took some time in collaboration between Pat Metheny and Ornette Coleman, but I recorded Song X with Ornette Coleman back in 1977, and Avery Fisher Hall, a live recording that was done. Last Exit and Power Tools are just manifestation of this particular time period.
Okay, what is the compositional structure when you approach Last Exit for a recording session or a gig?
I don't have a compositional structure. It's basically haiku.
Is everything improvised among the members of the band?
Totally.
And how does this take place?
The same way as if four people got together for a dinner, and Thailand restaurant, a Bangkok scene restaurant, and sat down and ordered what they each separately wanted to order to eat, and whatever drinks they wanted, and finished up with whatever cordials they wanted.
I like that. How would you describe the music of Last Exit to a casual listener?
I wouldn't even try to attempt to describe it to a casual listener. If the person heard the music and they got something from it, that would be fantastic. But I don't think I have the time at this particular point in my life to teach in those kind of classes or give those kind of seminars. It's the kind of music that's already that even either a person's life is at that point or it's not. You know, a vast majority of people can't deal with that. You know, but then a vast majority of people can't deal with the truth in anything. You know, that's probably the reason we have so many game shows and on TV, game shows and cartoons. Fleeing from the reality that this was inside. I'm sure if you were looking at a series of Saturday morning cartoons and then all of a sudden it was interrupted with a video of Last Exit, that a lot of people would be totally captured at one time. But without doing anything of that nature, the people who normally might be affected by the music, if they heard it, they probably would be more influenced by what they think their friends might think, what they feel that other people might think, as opposed to thinking what they think, because this kind of music requires a person to be able to think and listen and feel and hear what they hear and feel and think and experience. A lot of people are not at that point in their life, not really to take responsibility for what they feel and hear and think.
Hey, thanks. It seems that the second and third Last Exit albums have been a little more focused than the first. It also sounds like the members of the band are improvising better with each other, along with their playing experience. Is this true, and why?
I guess the same reason that if four people went out to play on a tennis court to play doubles, you know, and the first time that they played, they would have to bounce the ball back and forth a few times. To each other, you know, to see and feel the different serve and the power behind each serve and the expression given between each player. And after the second or third game, then that begins to improve and the understanding of who's doing what with the ball. The same would be on the basketball court, you know. But more so on a tennis double, you know, where people are all working together at something. The more and more they do it, the better they get at it.
And how do you feel about the chemistry between you and the other members of the band?
It must be good because I hadn't thought about it.
Okay, that's good. Can I move on to another topic now? And that is of the Pulse album that you made, the solo drum album, and the concept of Pulse. I read an article in Modern Drummer where you were talking about your concept of pulse versus rhythm. On some recordings, such as Power Tools, the B section has become a little freer. A pulse remains, but the band doesn't play the rhythms as outright in the A sections. Is the band playing the pulse, and did this concept derive from Ornette Coleman and Cecil Taylor?
Maybe you better back up there a second. You're saying that the band played pulses on a solo album.
Well, there wasn't a band on the album Pulse.
No.
But I mean, such as in Power Tools and in the Decoding Society,
mm-hmm.
where your B sections will become freer than the A sections. And the band doesn't seem to be playing the rhythm as much as the pulse.
Oh, you mean the pulse of playing? Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were talking about having an album called Pulse.
Right, I'm talking about that also in an extended way.
Okay. It's kind of early in the morning. I just write music, you know. I'm not a person who sit down to deliberately compose a concerto, a symphony. Although I just completed doing a string quartet for the Cologne Radio in West Germany, But basically, I just sit down, when I hear something and write it, you know, either I'm practicing drums and I hear someone write it, or I'm walking around in some different city, I'm meeting some people, and I take my flute and write the music. Usually that is the A section, and the B section is usually a reciprocal statement of that in some way or another. I don't deliberately set out to make one more freer or one more constructed. It's just that that's the way the melodies are, and that's the way the music derives. In response to whether it's influenced by Cecil or Arnett or anyone, sure, I think everything I do is from the time that I have played, came in and played with Abbott Island, but properly, I know for sure it has something to do with my life long before I even met any of those people. You know, it's like I say intuitively, I know, just looking at my life at this point in retrospect, I mean, I happen to be born in the right situation at the right time and received the right experiences to actually be able to connect with the people that I have connected with and played with over the years. I'm sure it has some kind of significance, much more profound than I'm aware of at this particular point. But I know that there is some kind of connection. You know, for me to come to New York and first work with Abbott Island, and then this experience working with Betty Carter, who's all rhythm in her playing, and to be severely criticized at one point by Max Roach, but criticized as a teacher and as a person who loved what I was doing, not as a wayward person. And to work with Ornette Coleman and Cecil Taylor, and the situation where I work, I've been working with Chirac, who I ran into when I first came to New York in 66. Worked with Laswell. I think all these things, some kind of way I've always known these things would happen. Otherwise, I don't think I would have been able to last as long as I have.
Okay. What was it that Max Roach criticized? Was it your concepts?
No, it was my negative behavior off the bandstand.
Okay. Let's talk about the album Pulse and how it ties into the rest of your music. Why did you get the idea to do the solo drum album Pulse? And can you tell me a little bit about the making of the album?
Well, I didn't start out making a solo album. I was making the album Barbecue Dog. And at the time that I was making the album Barbecue Dog, I went in to warm up early on the last recording day because we had relaxed a little more and we had got most of the music down. We had one more day to record. I was on tour in England, and it had been arranged by a friend of mine, David Breskin, to record here in around St. Germain, to record the record band in London. So I got up early that Saturday morning and went to the studio and just was warming up, playing drums, you know, as I normally do. Tightening and retuning and so forth, and I got into playing to just soloing. And I was there about 2 hours before everybody else. And after I got through playing, Vernon came in the studio and said that St. Germain had came in and had recorded all the stuff I had done. And suggested that I do the Richard III piece that I used. He caught me practicing over at Soundscape. I used to practice there alone all the time. And every once in a while, he would come through there, and he knew that I used to do this piece from Edgar Allan Poe and the piece from Shakespeare, When Am I Discontent. But those were just personal things that, you know, I think all musicians have that thing I have, that you just personally do when you're playing and you're enjoying what you're doing and enjoying playing. So I did record that part, and that was just a tape, you know, that for my personal use later whenever I wanted to do it. And somewhere along the line, a year or so, or maybe 2 years later, I read in Laswell, and he asked me if, about doing a solo record. And I told him that I had recorded some stuff over in England, but I hadn't heard it since I did it. I'd done it, but I know it was on tape. So he asked me to let him hear it, and I got him a copy of the tape, and he heard it, and he came back to me, and he said he wanted to make an album out of it. And by this time, my personal movement at that this particular point was dealing with the book written by the great poet Emeritus at Howard University, Sterling Brown. And I was particularly into reading Puttin' on Dog and Slammin' in Atlanta and some of the other poems that had struck me rhythmically and emotionally and harmonically. So at that time, I just took what I'd been working on at that time. In other words, it was two periods. One period when I was working on Edgar Allan Poe and Shakespeare, and this other period when I was working on the work of Sterling Brown. And I recorded that here in New York, that phase of Puttin' on Dog and so forth in New York City, and that was a complete record, you know, which also gives its total different movement, you know, from one genre to another genre, a different feeling, which makes it a complete, one of the more complete solo albums probably existing.
Okay, thanks. In an article I was reading in the St. Louis newspaper, there was a record review of your album, When Colors Play, and it mentioned a concept of yours called Dynamentham. Mm-hmm. Could you explain it and how it applies to your music?
Well, when you break it up, dynamics, melody and rhythm is basically what I'm dealing with, you know. By playing rhythms and using the inflection of dynamics, the emotional and the overall trim of what I'm doing comes forward, you know. And so, basically, when I'm playing rhythms and using dynamics and rhythms, then out of that, you know, out of the use of dynamics, comes these particular melodies, you know, which comes from control of dynamics. So that what I'm doing is using dynamics, rhythm, and melody in conjunction with each other. One enhances or one influences the other. From one of the three, one will derive from the three, either way. And that's basically what I am about musically, you know, using rhythms, melody, and dynamics. And it comes out compositionally as the Decoding Society, the music that I'm presenting at this particular point. At this time that you're saying, preface earlier as being a time of the reappearance of the vanguard.
Okay, thanks. How would you say that your composing has changed over the earlier Decoding Society albums all the way up to the present?
The same as if you put a child in kindergarten and they begin to learn the ABCs, but what are they for? You know, a lot of the things, when I started writing melodies, I didn't know what was going to happen with them. I just knew that it was something. I had just developed my life to the point where I knew that I had to write what I was hearing. At this point, not only do I write what I hear, but I know what I'm writing and how to structure it.
Do you have a call on the other line?
Yeah, hold on a second.
Okay.
Hey, hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. So I have grown with the music is basically what I'm saying, you know, and I will continue to grow with that. I mean, I've been writing music now, so this is my 11th year, you know, which means I'm at having a celebration. I forgot about that. The writing. writing has grown much more coherent. My life has grown more coherent, and I've been traveling much more, and I do a lot of writing from traveling, you know. So all these things enhance this. It's a whole history being coming forth at a time when obviously it must be a need for it. Otherwise, I couldn't exist at this particular point doing what I'm doing.
You mentioned traveling. Are you referring to your trip to Africa that I read about in the St. Louis paper?
Not only a trip to Africa. I had been all over Asia before I went to Africa. You know, that's a lot of people who have read on the back of Color Play see where I went to Africa. I went and visited. I went to 8 different countries. I started off in the Congo in Africa, but I have to preface that by saying I did a 7-country tour of Asia before that. So in other words, I was able to look at things from two sides of a coin, from the opposite sides of this world. You know, and of course, I'm always talking about, yes, I am talking about those trips and all those trips I've taken that have led up to the way that I'm composing and writing and hearing and listening and feeling people at this particular point.
How was your trip to Africa and Asia, and how did that affect the music of When Colors Play?
It affected because a lot of music in Color Play just came out of from while I was doing the travel over there and meeting people and talking with people and listening to different cultures and their music. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. I'd like to wind this up a little bit with, first of all, what are your future plans for Last Exit as a band and then in your own music, the Decoding Society, and you'd also mentioned that you're a string quartet. What are your future plans to be doing compositionally?
Well, I just received a call from Germany yesterday from my agent saying that they want me to come to Italy to redo the string quartet in October. I'm looking forward to that because that's a new adventure for me. And I hadn't experienced this music played by classical performers. I hadn't, and actually the... What amazed me the most is the fact that the people really got into playing the music, which is one of the beliefs that I had in terms of classical music, is that it's a music that's written by other composers and people learn to play it and just play it and not with the kind of expression that it really deserves and has in it. And I was amazed that these people were actually playing my music with lots of warmth and lots of feeling. Desire to make something happen, as opposed to here was a black composer, and this is not going to be anything. I mean, they really, really made the music sing. So I'm looking forward to doing that again. And response to Last Exit, when the work appears, we're there to do it. You know, someone put in a call, and from the four corners of this earth, the four of us will appear together and play. At any time that someone makes that possible. The Decoding Society is an ongoing and continuing vehicle of my own self-expression, and it will always be there. It will always be in the environment at this point.
Okay, thanks. Last of all, is there anything you'd like to say to our listening audience that I haven't covered in response to any other music that I may or may not have mentioned?
Music is a communication between the audience and the person who's the musicians who are playing. It's not a one-way thing, street. A lot of people think because of improvised music that it's, you know, the music is just musicians just selfish into what they're doing, but that's not so. And in my life, I don't think it's. I know it has never been so. Music is a communication between. The performers and the listeners, you know, and when the magic of that is combined, it chemically works. Those positive things rise up into the universe to make other things positive in those same genre possible and available for people in the future. which I think is needed for all of us, the release, to build up a tension in life and a release of it, the way the last exit, when one listens and travels with it, is allowed to do so. The melodic flow, the atonal and the combinations of melodies that exist in the Coding Society, all expression of the same thing. All the other experiences I'm doing are all just reflection of what music can be when one totally dedicates his life to it, to making it and giving it to people, and expressing it and living with it, enjoying people, and the expression of what they're doing, what they're about. So basically what I'm saying is that music, the musician, listeners are all one. And I'm just happy that more and more people are listening at this point, you know, which makes it my life and my feelings and the joy of playing much more pleasing and enjoyable.
Well, thank you very much. We really enjoyed the interview. My friend Scott and I were wondering if there were any live performances anywhere in the continental U.S., because we would like to come out and see you play sometime.
On July 4th, we play at the Montreal Jazz Festival in Canada. On July 6th, we play at the Knitting Factory in New York City. On July 7th, 8th, and 9th, we play at the Caravan of Dreams in Texas. And July 10th, we play at the Liberty Lunch in Austin, Texas. And then we come back to New York to record.
All right, and I'd like to send you a tape of this program. When it's all done, I'll have taken the interview and put some music with it. And I'd like to send you a copy of the tape. Do you have an address I could send it to?
Yes, and do you have a copy of my new record that's coming out now?
Which one?
Called I don't Texas. Think
so. No, we don't.
You haven't heard that?
No, but I'll go out and get it right away.
Okay, you'd have to ride the caravan to get it.
Okay.
Because it's not in the stores yet. It won't be for another 2 weeks.
All right.
My post office box, which is better because I'm traveling a lot, is a P.O. box right to Ronald Shannon Jackson, care of Decoding Society, P.O. Box 527, New York, New York, 10024. That's Planetarium Station.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot. Maybe we will come out to one of these gigs you're playing soon, because we've been wanting to see you play for a long time, and the Midwest isn't a real good place to see a lot of good bands.
Well, you know, I can give you a number of my agent, and he's trying to book hook up some work in that area in the fall.
Okay, what's his number?
His name is Mitch Goldman, and his number is area code 718-788-5036.
Okay, I don't see, you know, with the Midwest being in the state of mind that it is, I don't see a lot of gigs. What is your minimum for a show?
Talk with him about that, but where is Bolivis in Ohio? Sure, and I played out there with the Decoding Society.
Yeah, a friend of mine said he saw you in, a friend of his had seen you in Akron once.
I was in Akron, I was in, I played in Ann Arbor, has been supporting my music. Excuse me, too, to put my first concert. With my own Decoding Society, we're all done that in the Midwest. You know, and it have been over the years. I've continued to receive strong support from Oberlin, and even more so from Ann Arbor. So it's just a matter of me being able to add some more schools in that area. I've been touring Ann Arbor almost continually since 1980, every fall.
Is there any plans to play through this fall?
Anywhere?
Is there any plans to play in Ann Arbor this coming fall?
I think there are, you know, Ann Arbor, University of Indiana, University of Iowa, Kansas University, certainly I've been out there. You know, I played at Oberlin 3 times.
Okay, well, we'll look for that, too.
You know, so if you give him the name of the people who's going to be responsible this fall, he can definitely hook that up. In fact, that was him that called just then, so you probably could catch him if you called him immediately after we get through.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much.
And just giving the people that we could contact when we come through that way. I mean, it's certainly not nowhere near the fees that, you know, when you have the big pop groups out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly something that's affordable.
Okay. All right, I'll pass this on to the people at the university that put the concerts together.
Mm-hmm. But you should make contact with him now.
Okay.
So he can try to work and try to find that out, because the fall programs, most have been done already.
All right.
As you probably know, you know, and he can get in contact with you. But call him now, okay?
Okay.
All right, good.
All right, thank you very much for your time and for the interview.
All right, you're welcome.
And I'll send you a tape of this when it's all done.
Let me hear what it is. And call Caravan and get the new record.
Okay, I will.
You can do it as a radio, for the radio station.
Okay, and the radio station can get a copy for airplay.
Well, you can get a copy now, which would be better, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so they'll be on the list. Call a lady and ask for a lady named Judy or Jill Poisner or Mike. And the number you can call is area code 817-877-3332.
And that's the Caravan of Dreams?
That is the Caravan of Dreams, yes. That's the record department. Call them. You want to speak to Jill or Judy or Michael. Either one of them, and tell them I gave you the number and asked you to call. I think you called it from Bowling Green. They'll send the record to you.
Okay.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks.
Okay, and then call Mitch to back that up, and he'll make sure you get the record, because he does the radio. The radio for the station. I mean, for the Caravan of Dreams.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate all this.
Oh, yeah. I hope you enjoy it.
I will.
All right, take care.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Bye.